If you enjoy this episode of the Proglodytes Radio podcast, feel free to subscribe on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app so you can keep on listening. Also, head to proglodytes.com for album reviews, artist interviews, and discussion about progressive music. Well, I guess we can get started.
Cool.
Oh, I thought we already had, Brad. This was going so well.
Yeah, I know. It'll be like Inception or Groundhog Day. We'll just get started over and over again until the right podcast happens.
Whatever works, that's fine.
We're stuck in this temporal feedback loop until we pick the correct albums, and then we can get out of it.
No, that was wrong. That's the best part of this. You know, for every album we mention, there's going to be like four other people out there going, "No, they didn't mention this album."
Oh, yeah.
Well, nice. let's go ahead and do introductions. So, Cedric, if you want to start, tell us who you are, what you do. And then I thought your first foray into prog. What was your first prog album?
Oh, my God. Well, Cedric Hendrix is my name. No relation, even though it's spelled like Jimmy, though I am a big fan. I am a full-time policeman, I'm a part-time musicologist, and I am a soon-to-be-published author.
Ooh.
I have a book coming out called I Can't Be the Only One Hearing This, A Lifetime of Music Through Eclectic Ears, coming out through Global Publishing Group of Denver. How is that for a plug?
Nice.
should be out hopefully by springtime. My first prog experience, good God. I am going to lean and go ahead and say Genesis, probably in the early 80s. Most likely it was Abacab, but that album kind of opened the door to going back to the 70s stuff, and eventually I think Seconds Out would be my true first experience.
Yeah, because when you said Abacab is your first prog album, I just imagine those hordes of prog fans like, you know,
and I'm right there with you, our fellow prog fans. I get it. That was the pop era, and my staggering level of ignorance about not knowing about the Gabriel era was resolved when I went back and bought a scratchy copy of Genesis of Seconds Out on vinyl, and then I had to go back and explore the old albums. That was the prog. I get it. I'm there.
Now, I think Abacab is terrific, but I digress. Right. Gavin, you want to say hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Gavin Wallace Aylesworth. I also love Abacab. I play drums in a band named Bent Knee, and my first prog foray would probably... So I grew up listening to Peter Gabriel. That's like the first music I remember hearing.
Nice.
And I would say the first... So it's either that, but I know some people kind of are on the fence about whether or not to consider Peter Gabriel a prog artist. I mean, I think he's one of the most progressive, you know, musicians and creators of all time. But Rush's All the World's a Stage, than that, was like, you know, I was 10, and my father and I were talking, and, you know, my father's also a drummer. And at the time, I was really huge into Kiss.
Right.
You know, gigantic into Kiss. I still am. But I said, I think Peter Criss is the best drummer of all time. And my dad said, oh, really? And he came home the next day. He bought me a copy of All the World's a Stage on CD and sat me down and played me that, you know, Working Man Finding My Way medley with the solo, with Neil's solo in it. And my brain just exploded. You know, I had no idea a drum kit could do that, and that a person operating a drum kit could do that. You know, and it's been a long ride ever since.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Can I add in that my first prog experience was probably fusion. because my dad introduced me to both Jean-Luc Ponty and Return to Forever in about 1979, give or take. I'm pretty sure I'm the old man of this particular group, by the way, because CDs hadn't been invented yet when I first got into this stuff. So just saying, but that opened me up to, you know, speaking of amazing drum parts, Lenny White and, you know, Rayford Griffin and all those guys.
Which album was the Return to Forever one?
Oh, The Romantic Warrior.
Oh, my
Romantic
gosh. Warrior. That was rips.
Just mind-blowing.
That's great, yeah.
So absolutely mind-blowing. Yeah. I was drawn in by the cover art, you know, that big Knight in Shining Armor. And that's, you know, when it was on LP, so you've got the big 12x12 version of it. And my dad caught me looking at it, and he said, you think the cover's amazing? Put the record on. and he was right. My dad was an incredibly smart man, and he was very clever about how he got his 12-year-old rock-loving son into jazz. And he knew exactly what he was doing.
Nice.
I love Romantic Warrior is one of my favorite albums. I love
it's a classic.
And the drums especially. I mean, everything else is great. So my name is Thomas. Many of you have heard us in Proglodytes Radio podcast before, my brother Arthur and I, but I am the manager of Proglodytes website and podcast, and my first prog experience. So, you know, I don't know if you guys have this, but there's like a pre-conscious music listener and post-conscious music listener.
Oh, like, absolutely.
You have like when you're a kid. When I was a kid, my mom and dad would listen to all sorts of really cool stuff like Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, and I heard Yes growing up and different things like that, but I wasn't like paying attention to it, and I would kind of have it in the background because I also loved Weird Al and, you know, Yanni and Jackson 5 and pretty much whatever else I could get my hands on. But I think I view the Beatles as when I started just loving music, like when I started wanting to save up my money and buy records and buy tapes and buy albums. And so I would say my first, I guess, quote unquote prog album might be a controversial one. It was 90125, which I will ardently defend as a prog album.
Well, it's definitely from a prog band.
Well,
yeah.
I guess so. It's got Cinema on it. It's got Changes, which is pop in the second half. But that intro, people forget about that intro. I mean, it's a weird album. It's unlike any other pop stuff that was coming out at the time, I think.
But absolutely.
But the next album was that we got by Yes was Fragile, of course.
Right.
So having those two.
And it's funny how many people would hear 90125 with my classic rock loving friends, and they'd go gaga over that record. And you put on Fragile or the Yes album or Close to the Edge, and they'd look at you funny. And it's like, guys, it's the same band.
You know, so, right, but, give or take a few minutes.
Yeah. You know, so it's just odd. I'm almost certain that I heard In the Court of the Crimson King, and I know I heard some Emerson, Lake, and Palmer from the classic rock station when I was a kid, but like you said, I just wasn't conscious of it. And it really wasn't quote unquote classic rock at the time. It was a new release. It just kind of flew past me.
Yeah. You kind of have those first couple bands that kind of blow your mind. So today we want to talk about concept albums, mainly because I think prog kind of, that's one of prog's things. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Oh yeah.
It's like a prog thing to have a concept album. So one of the things we wanted to kind of talk about or discuss is what makes a good concept album? What makes a concept album effective as, you know, a musical device? So I wonder what you guys think. I have some notes, but what to you guys, if you had to build a rubric out, what would be the requirements for you for a good concept album?
Well, Gavin, you're the musician. You go first.
Well, I would say that I feel like the story, of course, in a concept album is vital, but also the way that the story is laid out over the album, I think, is important. You know, I think The Wall does an incredible job of telling a story over time and telling it well.
Great example.
Oh, thank you. And Yeah, so I think not only the strength of the story, but the strength of the storytelling is vital in the concept album world.
Right.
I put narrative, like strong narrative quality, because one thing I'll say even about my favorite concept albums is it's really hard to maintain a story in that context. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's hard to tell a narrative when all you can do is sing, or when, like, I mean, I know sometimes bands will have interludes where they'll have like a narrator or talking, but it sounds cheesy and weird. So it's like, yeah. how do you tell this story in a way that's like musically effective, but also lyrically effective and also complements the story? So yeah, I totally agree with you there.
Yeah, I'm there. I would piggyback on that idea. And I would also say that a pretty much universal theme musically would kind of weave in and out of the story and in and out of the album. You don't have to play the exact same thing at the end that you did at the beginning, but it would be nice if there was some kind of, you know, musical connection, a chord change, a chorus, something like that, that just kind of connects the back to the front, as it were.
Sure.
And it's hard. That's really hard to do. I mean, here's a surprising album I picked for you, and it's not even quote-unquote prog, but it's definitely a concept album. And I think of Prince's The Rainbow Children, which has a really good, really universal story, a unifying story all the way throughout, and it weaves in and out, but it's a Prince album and not a prog album, but there's definitely a sense of theme from front to back, and that was just one of my honorable mentions that I kind of pushed off to one side.
Yeah, that's interesting. So musical themes, like, if you're rating a concept album's quality, like, can the music be great and then the narrative suck and it still be a good concept album?
For me, I don't know. I'll let Gavin go first again, but go ahead.
I'd say that it could be a good album at that point. You know, if the story doesn't fit over the songs well, or if the story itself is weak, but the songs are good, you know, at the end of the day, it's still a good album. You know, maybe it doesn't work as a concept album, you know, but you can still have, you know, a good sounding album that people will want to listen to, you know, even though the story doesn't exactly work.
Right.
And
exactly.
I'm trying to think of any examples of those, but I can't.
I'm going to anger some folks here. I love The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. I think it's musically, lyrically so powerful. There are songs like that speak to my heart. I love, you know, love that album dearly, but the second half, I think that the story, you're just like, okay, what is going on? Once you hit Slipper Man, I'm just like, okay, testicles are being stolen. let's see.
Well, I tell you, that's number two on my list, and I'm not going to say you're wrong, because I'm kind of with you. It gets to the point where I know what the story is about, but I think somewhere around the third side, I stopped caring in a way because the music's so doggone good.
Yeah,
and it's just one of those things, like, you know, I have no idea what the abstract, improvised, music, concrete thing was all about, but, you know, it fits. So let's just let it happen. Let's just roll on by and then just keep going.
Yeah, which is hilarious, because you're like, oh, okay, he gets locked in this magical cocoon. Oh, that makes sense.
Right.
Oh, <yeah. laughs> he's in the Grand Parade of Lifeless Packaging. Ah, okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. And then suddenly I'm griping about the Superman. Anyway, I guess, like, as far as, like, a narrative being told, I feel like The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway might be one of those things where it, like, is overanalyzed.
Right.
Like, from what I understand about it, it was written separately. Like, Peter wrote it separate from he wrote the lyrics and a lot of the themes separate from the band. And so I think it's one of those. Did you guys ever see the South Park episode about the poop that takes a pee?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Did you see that, Cedric?
I have not. You're gonna have to carry this narrative.
They just decided they would write the grossest story ever, like the most juvenile grossest story ever, until they wrote this story called "The Poop That Takes a Pee," and it's just like the most childish, like vile things just said in succession. And then, like, it becomes this national bestseller, and like college professors are analyzing it in their classes, and they're saying like it's a treatise on like modern consumerism and like capitalism, and you know, all these just, yeah, it's, I'm not saying that Lana's on a Broadway isn't a brilliant story, and actually like I find a lot of value in the symbols, like I think the symbols are really cool and effective, but I think it might be one of those things that like it was created and then it kind of gained a life of its own with the fans.
I can see that.
I think I'm gonna get burned at the stake.
Oh, you'll be all right.
Yeah,
you'll be okay. I kind of is Wish You Were Here from Pink Floyd a concept album in your eyes? I mean, because I understand that they wrote the songs about Sid, but it's not something that I really consciously go out of my way to follow narratively. I mean, I just think it's a fantastic record.
I don't think it's a concept album in terms of it being a, you know, this happens, then this happens, then this happens kind of narrative, but I think it's more of a kind of a portrait of how Roger viewed Sid or what happened to Sid.
Right.
So in that respect, yeah, I would say that it's you know, songs all revolving around a singular theme. So I do count Wish You Were Here as a concept album.
Okay.
I'd say, and maybe we should have defined this earlier, but there's probably two types. And I feel like I'm saying something super novel here, but it's probably not novel at all. There's like the concept album that's like a story, and then there's the concept album that's like a concept. So a story would be something like The Lamb or Quadrophenia or Tommy.
Yeah.
And then
right.
A concept would be like OK Computer or, you know, something like that, where it's like got this, we're going to write an album about, you know, some idea. And so it's like woven through all the songs, but, you know, it's not like told through story or whatever.
Gotcha.
Do you guys agree?
I'm glad you brought up OK Computer, because that is a favorite record, and I hadn't really considered it as a concept album, but I can definitely see what you're saying there. That makes perfect sense.
To me, the distinction would be just like, yeah, I would say that if there's a singular concept of the album, then it qualifies.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Like today, we're going to write a song about, you know, dogs.
Today we're going to write about fluffy bunnies, you know, right. You know, they're dancing on an arp synthesizer. That'll be fun.
There you go.
Let's start a prog band right now.
Right. We talked off the air about Peter Gabriel and whether or not he was prog or not. And as it happens, Ovo is number five on my list. And that is definitely a concept album. Now, how prog is it? That's arguable, because, you know, I'm not one that just, you know, adheres to these strict guidelines as to what's prog or not, but very rare do you see a top 40 band, you know, do a concept album.
That's true.
It's true.
So I'd be interested to hear what everybody else thought about that when fitting into the soundscape, as it were.
Well, you were talking about concept albums. I've had several people on the podcast in the past bring up Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly as a concept album of sorts, and as a main source of inspiration. So, you know, I think we could do a whole series. I don't know if anyone would want to listen, but I think we could do a whole series of podcasts on like this whole debate on whether or not it's prog and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I think it reduces down to like there's a progressive spirit and there's a progressive genre, and the progressive spirit is what matters to me.
Yes.
And I think Peter Gabriel has always had a progressive spirit about
it. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
I think
Robert Fripp has always had a progressive spirit about, but they've gone about it in very different ways.
Right.
Yeah.
So like the difference to me between So and Up is like two different bands. So like to me, that's progression, even though, you know, maybe he's not doing a song in 11/8 or something like that. Or
But he's definitely expanding, you know. You listen to some of his lyrics, and he's definitely stretching out into, you know, almost the esoteric. So that works.
Right. So anytime we talk about prog, my thing is, and it probably would get me in trouble, and just because I think, you know, when you're talking about genre purists, you have to like have some boundaries, but at the same time, I feel like anymore, if you want to call yourself a prog band, that's pretty much the only qualifier. Like, if you're marketing yourself as a prog band, well, you know, that's pretty much it. Like,
it's funny you say that, because people ask me all the time, you know, well, what kind of music do you like? And I say, in my world, there are only two kinds of music, and that's good and bad.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where I understand the need for classifications, and I'm certainly guilty of thinking that way at times. But, you know, music is music to me. Now, I'm not a Kendrick Lamar fan, for example, by any stretch of the imagination, but I would be curious enough to listen to what he had to say to see how it would fit in terms of a concept album, to see who else has done something like that, even if it's, you know, Trapped in the Closet or what have you. So you've always got some kind of concept out there. So it's just now a question of listening to it.
You just told everybody my top album. You
oh, no.
Sorry.
I'm not going to
cats out of the bag.
Maybe I'll edit this out.
Sorry about that.
But I went down a YouTube rabbit hole once, and I made it to, like, episode 13 of Trapped in the Closet. And it was, like, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was like, who am I? It was one of those moments where, like, you look over at the bedroom mirror, and you're like, who is this person I'm looking at?
What have I become?
Yeah,
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, anyway.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Now, I did see the South Park take on that, for the record.
Yeah, gosh. Yeah, modern life.
Oh, yes,
it's
definitely.
Disorienting.
So there's so many records out there. I mean, I don't think of Ziggy Stardust as a concept record, though apparently it is, but it's just a killer collection of songs to me, and one of these days I need to study it a little harder, I guess.
A lot of people say it's, you know, it's the rise and fall. I just think when we were talking about narrative strength of being a way to qualitatively assess an album, like a concept album, I think that there are lots of great albums. I think Quadrophenia is kind of hard to follow at times. So, you know, it's one of those things, like, I'm debating in my head whether or not how much that matters to me, because, like, I think there are great albums, but I guess my rubric, I don't know that narrative strength is, like, the number one. I think ultimately, like, since it's music, like, the quality of the music is maybe what matters the most, but
right,
but it has to have some cohesive narrative in order for it to, like, be an effective statement of any sort.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, and I'm just sitting here thinking, the more I think on it, the more I honestly believe that if the music isn't interesting, I'm probably not that focused on the lyrics anyway. So it's one of those things where you've got to bring that to me and get my attention, and then you can draw me in from there.
Yeah, fair.
Sure. So, do you want to get into your faves?
We can do that. Yeah,
sure.
We can do that. You first again.
Me first? Oh, Gavin first.
Why don't you go first this time?
Oh, fine. Be that way. All right. Like I said, I put together a list of honorable mentions, and I've kind of been throwing them out there here and there with Ziggy Stardust and Wish You Were Here. I also threw Zappa's Joe's Garage in there.
Now,
I don't know, that's a great one. Yeah, the funny thing is that didn't even make my top five, and it's just a fantastic record. But go figure. How far do you want me to go, Tom? You want me to just cover the lower ones first and then work my way up, or do you want me to do one at a time?
I'll cut you off at 10 minutes.
Well, I think I'm going to try to keep it at, you know, like 90 seconds, if you don't want to take up all the air over here. We talked about OVO, Peter Gabriel. Gavin brought up The Wall, which is a good one. My number three was Steven Wilson's Hand Cannot Erase, which has a really interesting story behind it. Now, how cohesive the narrative is in my head, and it just depends from day to day. But yeah, I can see a unified theme behind it. But it's just a remarkably written, even better played album with a fascinating story behind it. And I don't know how many people actually know about the story, but it's the tale of a woman in London who was well-liked, who had friends, who had family, but she passed away in her apartment and nobody noticed for 3 years. And it just kind of speaks to the nature of the isolation of today's society, and Steven just did a remarkable job of bringing that across in narrative form and musically.
I'm a big fan of that album too.
Your turn, Gavin.
Okay, so
wait a second. Is that your top?
No, that's number two. That's number three for me.
Oh, we're making this suspenseful.
Oh yeah. we got to keep stringing them along, pal.
All right.
So For me, other than my top, I have two tied at the top. Other than that, I kind of have a list of no particular order, just all albums that I both really love and also are, you know, concept albums.
Right.
One of those is Eskimo by The Residents.
Ooh, not familiar with that one.
Oh, sorry, did you say you are or aren't?
I am not.
Oh, it's a very interesting album, and it's a concept album unlike any other, because instead of it's a concept album without any lyrics and barely any music. It's in the traditional sense.
Gotcha.
It's a lot of kind of ambient, just kind of like sound poems, which makes it sound way more pretentious than it is. But just about a day in the life of an Eskimo tribe.
Huh.
And it's rad. Yeah, it's a great headphones album for when, you know, you're in a quiet place and you can listen to this.
Like a
this igloo. Album,
Like a quiet place, like an igloo. Is that optimal?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
location.
But it's a super super creatively done album. I would also say, I actually have another Residents album too, which is God in Three Persons.
Okay.
Which is kind of one long epic poem put over various tunes. It's a very interesting album. It's about a pair of conjoined twins who are found by this kind of con man kind of guy, and he turns them he takes them around and they do kind of sideshows. And from there, it just gets weird, and it kind of delves into the nature of sexual preference and just all this weird stuff. But it's at times horrifying. It's at times hilarious. It's touching in places. It's a very it's a complex and strange but wonderful album.
Wow, nice. You got me sold.
Yeah, yeah, God in Three Persons by The Residents. Yeah, it's oh man, it is it's a big one.
Well, thanks, Gavin. You're giving me a new album, new band to obsess over. I appreciate that.
Oh, hey, anytime. Thank you.
And now I have a flimsy excuse to go back to my record store.
There you go.
There you go.
You're up, Tom.
So we're doing honorable mentions now, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So this was tough for me. I had several that I wanted to mention. I would say, so Spock's Beard Snow is one that a lot of people would say, I think. Just because I think that Spock's Beard was a band that was pretty high profile at the time in the prog world. And the narrative is strong. It's compelling. There are cool musical themes. It's among my favorites, but I don't know if it's my favorite. I included Hand Cannot Erase as one of my favorites, but kind of like the others, it kind of loses me. And also by Stephen Wilson, In Absentia, the Porcupine Tree album.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
That's one that's conceptually strung together by, and it's kind of like, somebody might disagree with me, but it seems like it explores just darkness, dark themes, dark inner lives that people have. Because one song is about a serial killer. It's about, you know, just, so it's not so much a concept album in any story of any story in any way, but it's more just kind of like this concept of inner darkness. I don't know how else to describe it. And when Stephen Wilson talks about it, he doesn't ever reveal too many of the details either. He kind of just says, you know, make your own assessments from it. But
right. So Stephen writes from kind of a dark place anyway. So that's kind of one of his universal themes, it seems. I'm not complaining. I'm just, you know, noticing. I'm a big fan. So apparently I can handle it. I enjoy it.
Yeah. Another one I really like is Klaatu. Have you ever heard them?
I've heard of them.
They did an album called Hope. I was a big fan of the Beatles back in the day, and there was this rumor going around that the Beatles continued on in the form of this band, Klaatu. Did you guys hear that story?
I haven't heard that one.
A lot of people were like, is it the Beatles? Are they forming? And they got pretty weird and wild. They had a lot of songs about space, but there was a very Beatles-y sound to them. And so Hope is about this alien race that, through their own pride and missteps and, you know, they basically destroy themselves. And so I don't know if that's a nice modern tale to be told, I guess.
Interesting.
Anyway, it's an interesting album. I don't think enough people know about it. It's kind of one of those unsung. It's very overblown. There's all these like symphonic passages that last for measures and measures. But I wanted to at least mention that because it's pretty interesting.
Is that another characteristic of the concept album, you know, where it has some over-the-top elements? Because a lot of these records do.
I think it's one of those things that I wouldn't use as a rubric definer, but I think it's pretty much... I think if somebody says, I'm going to write a concept album, it's just sort of like a byproduct of that.
Fair enough.
I think, yeah, if there are certain... I would say some albums more than others. You know, I, as we'll learn in the next go around, I love The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. I love that album, but there are certain sections that are just a little too grandiose. I think, the big section in Anyway. I think that big piano, dun, 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 you know.
Right.
Yeah.
You just imagine like a Bugs Bunny composer, you know. Like,
we're just waiting for the Kill the Wabbit section.
Pretty much. Like...
Now, I would say that in terms of kind of pointlessly epic overblownness, another album that's on my kind of, you know, honorable mention thing was Music from the Elder by Kiss.
Oh, goodness. It's funny you bring that album up, and I'll let you talk in just a second, but I've never been a huge Kiss fan.
Oh, that's totally understandable. That's fine.
But Music from the Elder has the one Kiss song I love, which, of course, everybody else hated, which was I.
Oh, yeah. I like I. It's a good song.
Yeah, I love that song. Yeah. But of course, you know, I've run contrary to everyone musically, so it makes sense that everyone else hated it.
it's an album that I first got when I was like 8, you know, cause that's kind of when my whole Kiss thing was starting. You know, it was 96. They had just put the makeup back on. I was all about that.
Right.
But it's just this incredibly vague story kind of about a boy who becomes a hero. And then there's a mention of a villain and then they escape from an island and then he believes in himself. Like, that's the story. And
I feel super inspired right now. I don't know about you guys.
I'm fired up too.
And it's Bob Ezrin produced it. It was the first thing he did right after The Wall.
Right.
And so it sounds way better than it deserves to, because it's got that incredible Ezrin, you know, early 80s Ezrin production. There's orchestras and choirs and... There's a narration skit at the end, and you know, it's just overblown to the max, and I love it. It's a very controversial album among Kiss fans for reasons that would be very apparent if you listen to the album.
Well, yeah. I actually went and read this.
I can see that.
This Gene Simmons interview they posted a while back basically said, yeah, I think that album sucks. Like, I guess the band, they don't like the album that much. Probably because they tried really hard at it and the record sales didn't translate well. But
I don't want to turn this into a podcast about The Elder, but there's a book out called Odyssey, which is a 400 or 500 page book about the making of that album.
Holy cow!
That whole process—it's a great read, It's a great read. I love that book. But it seems like they were just kind of confused the whole time in the studio. And at first they wanted to make a really hard rock album. And then they kind of somehow fell down this rabbit hole of, a concept album. And then we'll have a stage show. And then we'll have a movie. You know, just like Pink Floyd did.
Oh, goodness.
Right, yeah. And Dream Theater's doing now. Have you guys been maybe peripherally paying attention to Dream Theater's The Astonishing plans?
Oh, God, no.
Are they doing a movie?
Well, they talked about, like, maybe doing a stage show, which I was like, okay, you know, that kind of makes sense.
Right.
James
right,
LeBlanc yeah. played like 7 characters on the album. I was like, it'd be kind of cool if they had distinct individual voices, kind of like Arjen Lucassen, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Right.
But yeah, they wrote a book. I guess they made a novelization, and they actually made a video game that was like a strategy video game.
This is where I get in trouble. I have that album, and I haven't finished it yet. I'm just saying.
You still have
fun. Yeah, man.
It's okay. I will keep trying, but oh wow.
Yeah, it's very easy to hate that album. I think it would have made an okay single album, but I think
hate is a strong word, but it's wow.
Yeah, you're talking about over the topness. That album is a little much.
Yeah,
a lot much.
I've enjoyed Dream Theater over the years, and I'm not going to get into the whole pre and post Portnoy thing. You know, either the music works or it doesn't. You know, and for the most part, for me, Dream Theater works. But there are days when it's just like it's. I would just say a little for me personally, a little Dream Theater goes a long way. That's all I'm saying.
I'm inclined to agree with you.
Yeah. Saints from a Memory is one of my favorite concept albums.
Sure. Yeah, that is a good album. That's a great album.
It's a very effective concept album, too, like as far as repeating themes. And there's some sort of storyline, even though it's not always apparent.
Right. Now, what about Rush? Because they do like, well, first of all, I didn't even mention Clockwork Angels, which I think I'm one of the 4 people on Earth who just loves that album. Just loves it to death. And that just popped in my head. But what about a concept album that's only half the album, like 2112.
I don't know. What do you think, Gavin? Would that be?
I wouldn't say it's a concept album.
Right, right. Kind of a concept side.
Yeah, it's yeah. And I mean, Rush is one of my absolute, you know, favorite bands, and 2112 is a, you know, Hemisphere. I love them both, but I don't think I could call them concept albums.
Yeah, that's not a knock. I don't think. I think
It's just does it fit the format? That's all we're saying.
Right. I don't think it fits the format, unfortunately.
Right, and you talk about Hemispheres, which, you know, the first side of Hemispheres is basically a continuation of the end of the second side of A Farewell to Kings.
Yeah, yeah.
So it all kind of flows together. It's just not all in the same piece of vinyl, you know, so.
Yeah.
Right, and it's one story told over one song versus one story told over 3 songs or 5 songs or 10 songs. Or
right.
Yeah.
It's like writing a book, you know, a concept album's like writing a book, whereas this would be like one chapter or one short story here or one short story here.
I don't know if that makes sense. Now, I've only played it a couple of times, but Primus's new one, the Desaturating 7, that's a concept. It's quirky, but it's a concept.
And if we're just talking about new concept albums that I don't know, before we reveal the big reveal, what our top ones are, if we're talking about new concept albums that maybe need some time to kind of sink in, School Tree, have you guys heard School Tree?
Yeah,
I saw them in Chicago. They're a great band.
So I've been listening to that a lot. And Lainey does a great job of telling a cohesive narrative, and there's some really great tracks on there. So I'll let that one kind of, I'll see if it stands the test of time, but I really, really enjoy it. Just as far as like a statement being told, you can read my review if you're listening and curious. I was pretty effusive about it. I think it's a great
nice
great story.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Gavin.
Oh, I was going to say their fellow Boston people and friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great band. I was just thinking of Big Train when you mentioned newer prog bands.
Another terrific concept. Full Power.
Right.
I wouldn't even – we were going back to concepts that are stories versus that are themes. And Big Train's Full Power. I called it earlier a love letter to the proletariat. Maybe one of the most powerful concept albums that are revolving around a theme that I've ever heard. It's basically like every song is kind of a love letter to the hedgerow clippers and the dock workers of the world and the coal miners of the world.
Right.
It's very touching if you kind of like get into that headspace. These are stories about people that don't get stories told about them, you know, people who are forgotten with time. So to hear his, you know, what's that song? Call Me Up, Boy, Sit You Down by the Fire. I can't remember the name of the song, but it's a song about his dad working at the docks on these boats. And it's just cool that that will be memorialized in thousands of people's heads when, you know, otherwise it'd be forgotten. So I could go on and on about that album. I thought it was great.
And I think you've just started the first episode of Prog Idol, right?
Now. Oh, no! <There you go. laughs> I should edit that out and sing it way better than I did.
I can see the whole concept. We'd have Stephen Wilson and, you know, John Anderson as judges. You know?
There you go.
We need meaner people. Who would be Simon? I think
who would be Simon?
Robert Fripp, maybe?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
You'd have like two really supportive people, and then you'd have like Robert Fripp sitting there just glaring, like, say, like.
I don't believe that is in the complete spirit of the moment right now.
I'd rather be home right now.
Is this what needs to be done?
Exactly. Perhaps the best thing you could do is nothing at all.
I like Prog Idol. I think this is a good idea. So you get so Getty on there. You get like John Anderson on there. That could be like the spaced out person that doesn't make any sense when they answer. And then you get Robert Fripp to just like crap on everybody's dream.
Yeah.
I think Alex Lifeson needs a role in this, definitely.
Oh, he'd be wonderful at that. Yeah.
He's, Alex Lifeson is that crazy uncle I wish I had.
Yeah, totally.
I'm a big fan of him. He's a funny personality.
Yeah.
Well, before we go too far off the rails.
Are you guys ready to reveal your number one?
Oh, sure, why not?
Oh, yes.
Who's going first?
Please.
How about you?
Oh, sure, put the pressure on me. Well, I kind of surprised myself because, like Gavin, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway was right up there. And when the topic was first broached, that album popped into my head instantly. But an hour later, something else crept into my head because I was looking through my CD racks and saying, okay, what else is up here? What else is up here? And that's how I pulled Oboe and how I pulled Hand Cannot Erase and The Wall and thought of all these other records. But then I came across my Bowie section, and I said, well, Ziggy Stardust is kind of obvious. I mean, it's a good record and all, but then it hit me, Outside. Outside is just an absolutely amazing record that was created as a concept. What does he call it? The Diaries of Nathan Adler. Now, you could look at that however you want to look at it. Just a series of people dealing with a post-apocalyptic world at the end of the 20th century. And, of course, Bowie is doing all the voices. But it's the last album to me where he really went out of the way to disguise himself, you know, giving himself a personality per se. But I love this record on multiple levels. You know, you can tell Brian Eno is there. You can tell his production touch is there. It's cohesive and eclectic at the same time, which is not the easiest thing on earth to do, you know, to have songs that sound as different as they do, but still tie them together. You know, I mean, Heart's Filthy Lesson is just amazing. Have not been to London Town. What's the one? I'm Deranged. Is that what it's called? just crazy good stuff. This is the album that brought me back to Bowie. I was with him up until the early '80s. You know, Let's Dance kind of threw me off the train because I went into my prog rock, college rock era, and Let's Dance wasn't quite working. I was on board for Tin Machine, but you know everything else, I just kind of checked myself out. I bought Outside on a whim. You know, because it was his first record in a couple of years, and Brian Eno was back on board. I figured, what did I have to lose? And my mind was absolutely blown by this record. So that one, I would have to say, is probably my favorite concept record at the moment.
I'm so happy because that's – when you told me that, I thought, That's not a choice I would have ever thought. You know, that's it's like the memes where it's like the guy that your parents love and the guy that your parents warned you about. it's like the one that you're supposed to be with, and then the one that your heart just longs for.
I'm really curious to hear where I fall in this particular scenario.
Well, you're supposed to say "The Lamb on the Sound of Broadway." You're supposed to say, you know, "Scenes from a Memory." So I'm really glad that it's something that isn't always in the top 10 best concept album lists. You know what I mean?
Right, right. It's just one of those albums where, you know, you can't even describe it. It doesn't date. It sounds incredibly fresh. I played it this morning, and it sounds just as good now as it did 20-odd years ago when it came out. And that floors me just thinking that this record is that old. You know, but that just gives you an idea of how incredibly good it is and how cohesive it is that it's held up for this long.
Awesome.
Your turn, Gavin.
Yeah. Well, wow. Yeah. Well, first, I just want to say that, yeah, Outside is easily in my top five Bowie albums ever. I mean, it's such a great, you know, a lot of classics on that one. Strangers When We Meet, such a beautiful piece.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one.
Voyeur of Utter Destruction. Yeah, oh, classic.
Right.
My favorite, mine is The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. And it's an album that's been with me. I first heard it when I was, oh man. Well, Grand Parade of Lifeless Packaging has been in my consciousness since like the age of five.
I love that song.
Oh, it's a beautiful song.
Yep.
And then I finally kind of heard the whole album. I was maybe 11 or 12, and it just was perplexing and big and like sprawling and just kind of something that I was wrestling with at that time. It's a comfort album for me now. It's the kind of album where, like, you know, if I'm hanging out or you know, if I'm making dinner or something, I can put The Lamb on, and you know, it's always right there for me, and I can also, you know, dedicate myself to it each time I listen to it too. So
sure,
you know, it serves both purposes for me.
I think songcraft wise, I don't know if I think that some of the most beautiful melodies in prog music, like The Lamia, is one of the most just beautiful melodies. Like, I can't. I learned it on piano not too long ago. No, I can't play it as well as Tony Banks is, obviously, but just sort of awing at the chords that they used. And I don't know.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
For me,
it's Fly on a Windshield. I mean, that's just a great
beautiful
gut
song.
Punch of a song. Just, and I'm pretty sure they're using the Taurus pedals to get that bass sound out of it. And it's just, I can't get enough of that. I can't push my speakers hard enough, you know, to hear that song. And Gavin, you may be the first person I've ever heard to refer to The Lamb as dinner making music. I'm proud of you for that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I hope you're making something really complicated. You know, something that has
honey,
like
you,
60
honey, can you
ingredients.
Get us some music real quick? Oh, sure. I got one for you.
Yeah, there you go. You know, chopping vegetables, singing along to In the Rapids, you know,
exactly.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just don't chop too fast when it comes on, you know?
Oh, exactly.
That's true. You don't want to slice off some digits.
Exactly. What you got, Tom?
So I just, it kind of lame of me because I just released a piece about it, but The Shaming of the True by Kevin Gilbert.
Okay.
Have you either of you heard it by chance?
I have not.
I have not either, yeah.
So it's interesting. It's not usually included. It's like people in the know just love it. And then everyone else has never heard of it. But
right.
They, which is, how prog is that? That's like hipster prog.
Yeah, only if you say you only like their early stuff.
Well, Kevin Gilbert, you know, he's a singer-songwriter guy, just super gifted. He produced numerous people. He wrote Sheryl Crow's first album, pretty much, him and Bill Bottrell.
Wow.
He's a super gifted songwriter, but he just never quite was able to make it on his own. And he died under tragic and bizarre circumstances in the mid-90s. He was really good friends with Nick DiVergilio, who was his drummer from Ooh. Spock's Beard and Big Big Train. And Nick, John Rubin, and John Cuniberti, who's the audio engineer, got together and they, you know, Kevin had always been talking about this album he was writing, and it was about, you know, this young guy named Johnny Virgil who wants to go become a famous musician. And so he goes to this big city, and then he just basically, it's about becoming a rock star, realizing it's not what you hoped it'd be, and then just the utter depression and existential woes that come from, you know, realizing just how vapid the world is. Kind of like if you're already kind of screwed up coming into it, like it's just going to really mess you up. So it's just this rise and fall of this young musician, and it kind of paralleled Kevin's life a little bit, just the disillusionment. And but anyway, he died before he was able to complete it. So John, the guys I mentioned earlier, Kevin's manager, Nick DiVergilio, and John Cuniberti, worked on this album together, kind of filled in the blanks that he wasn't able to fill in. And the product is just, the narrative is super solid. The lyrics are hilarious. I mean, so one song, it's called The Suit Fugue, Dance of the A&R Men. And it's this gentle giant-esque fugue. Not, I mean, it's one of the most complicated pieces of music I've heard in Prague, but it's this five-part fugue, and each one is an A&R guy, and they say, like, you sound like Air Supply meets Gwar in a good way. And they say things like, you know, I'll have my girl take your information, and blah, blah, blah. It's just this very funny. So it takes a concept like getting called by all these A&R people that act like they care about you, but they really don't give a crap at all.
Right.
It's taking a concept like that and turning it into a song. And just each song has it's just this encapsulated, brilliant bit of wisdom about what it's like to be in that spot, to be a musician and to have these dreams of playing in front of these huge audiences, and then getting there and then just realizing, you know, why am I still empty? Like, why is this still not fulfilling me? And another great song is called Certifiable Number One Smash, and it's, he just gives directions on how to write a hit song. And it's kind of a huge jab at Madonna, who he produced earlier in his life. But it's just, every word is just like, you know, you've got Tanya Harding, nude, microbiotic, lacto-vegan, blah, blah, blah. Like, and then the midsection, he just is like, he basically says the entire plot of the Like a Prayer music video, you know, where Madonna kisses Jesus, except it's a young boy. it's vile. Like, it's one of the, I don't think there's a single Prague album out there that is more vile as far as just dark humor out there than this album. It's got some moments that they'll make you blush. But overall, it's, I couldn't speak enough to it, and I wish more people knew about it. It's just kind of one of those gems that, when it hits you, it's just it's super powerful. It's like a statement.
So that's a cool choice.
Yeah, Shaming of the True. I'd encourage you guys to check it out. It's, if you only check out one song, The Dance of the A&R Men is just hysterical.
Oh, the title alone.
Yeah, it's great.
That's a great choice. Question: Can a concept album be instrumental?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that Eskimo, the Residents Eskimo album is largely instrumental. I mean, there are vocals on it, but it's all in gibberish, kind of this like gibberish magma? Language that they constructed.
Kind of like listening to Sigur Rós.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, people, I love Sigur Rós. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they kind of
their own language. I asked that question because, they called it Hoplandic.
That's so cute.
go figure. I've chosen not to translate it and just enjoy the music. It's much easier that way.
Yeah.
I asked the question because Adrian Belew's E just popped into my head. And, you know, that was basically almost like a classical suite that he wrote for his trio, for Julie and Eric Slick. And he put together what he thought was going to be one piece of music at about 5 or 6 minutes, you know, really complex, really interesting, really challenging. And it turned into basically five pieces of music at 43 minutes. But when I play it in my head, and I wrote a piece about this on my blog, serdexsongs.com, cheap plug, I conceived it almost as falling down a mountain. You know, the opening theme is somebody just falling down or falling down a really steep hill, you know, rolling and tumbling, and the rest of the music is basically trying to climb back to the top. And that's, like I said, I have no earthly idea if that's what Adrian saw. I haven't asked him. I don't know. But in my head, that's what I saw. And so that kind of made it more of a concept to me.
I like the idea of concept albums. The hero's journey type concept albums, like Glamless Down on Broadway, like Heterotopia, Schooltree's new album. I think it's really cool that you can hear these weird cymbals and you can hear these unusual lyrics and personalize them. Like the Chamber of 32 Doors is such like a great, powerful existential song. Like it's about life choices,
right.
How hard it is to kind of feel like you have your own place in the world. So that's one really cool effect of concept albums, is when they're couched inside of a narrative, or even, you know, you're talking about musical, like they've got this thing in mind, but you can personalize something that may seem esoteric or far-fetched. I think that's really neat.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, cool, gentlemen. I think that about wraps it up, but it's been fun.
This was fun.
Yeah, so
we should get together more often.
Yeah.
Before I close.
Please, yeah.
Okay. You guys ready? You don't even know what's going to happen.
Yep.
I always try to take people by surprise with these. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather be completely invisible for one day or be able to fly for one day?
Ooh. I'm taking invisibility because that would probably get me into Selma Hayek's house.
Ew.
I have a mission.
Ew. You're not supposed to say that on air.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I am not going to Selma Hayek's house,
no.
I swear.
So this enchanter who cast the spell better not know about your intentions beforehand. You might have a problem on your hands.
Yeah.
You didn't add that part.
All right, so you'd say invisible for one day so you could spy on people.
Well, yeah, you can call it spying. I call it love from afar.
Gavin?
I would go personally with flying. Because one of the things that I do on YouTube is watch videos of Disneyland ride-throughs, you know, things of that nature.
Right.
So it'd be fun to go. I haven't been to Disneyland in a few years. It'd be fun to fly down there and then, you know, maybe just somehow fly over and just kind of land in the park somewhere, you know, making sure that I wasn't seen on my... my descent, but yeah.
Would you do the superhero landing? That's the question.
Oh, with the yeah,
the hands in your hips type thing.
Exactly. You got to bend the knee just right.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 Get that kind of power stance, the fist on the floor thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I.
Thanks for making that totally wholesome. As a matter of fact, that like image of you just kind of landing. The Superman stance in Disneyland is like totally the most wholesome thing I've heard like in a week. So I love it.
It's still trespassing, I suppose. But as far as trespassing goes, it's
pretty benign. I'm sure they'd be like,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, what's this guy doing here? I'm sure they totally forgive you.
Well, it's a victimless crime, but I guarantee you that I would get you out of any trouble.
You're like, come on, guy. He can fly. Come on. Cut him some slack.
Exactly. Come on. Did you not see the landing? Come on.
Yeah.
Now, if you flop on the ground, then they'll just be like, all right, get this guy out of here. He can't even fly right.
Exactly. Yeah, it's your bad ass. You're going to jail. I'm sorry.
That's just a copy. That's all right. Question two.
Yeah.
Would you rather be locked in a room that is constantly dark for a week, or a room that is constantly bright for a week?
Ooh.
Mm.
That's a tough one. So I guess my, here I go getting weird again. I guess my inner Bane / Darkman would prefer the darkness, or Batman would prefer the darkness, because the bright would probably drive me crazy.
Yeah. I wonder how that would be. I mean,
Oof.
A whole week of just,
I mean, just
complete
having
darkness.
Doing all that squinting. Ugh. No, that just sounds nightmarish to me.
Gavin, do you have any thoughts?
Yes, I would also go darkness because I have a hard time sleeping when lights are on, unless I'm incredibly overtired, in which I would just pass out. But also, let's see, in this room, would I be able to like have my laptop and stuff? I could still kind of watch movies and listen to stuff.
Good question. I'll say you can have...
See, there's always these catches here and there.
You're functionally blind.
So now, if, oh, say,
like,
ooh, boy,
so you could have like a laptop, but you'd have to use like vision impaired stuff to be able to see, like the screen's turned off.
Yeah, but if I was in the light room, I'd be able to.
Yeah, it would just be like normally. Like, I think the whole point is that it would be absolute darkness or absolute like lights on.
Well, you're just talking lights on and not, you know, super bright.
Yeah.
It would still be pretty mad.
Yeah, in that case, I might opt for the light room.
That's a good question. You know, and I'm sure Gavin's familiar with it because you do most of your work at night. When I worked at Night Watch, you know, a few weeks back during the civil unrest, you know, one of the hardest things in the world for me to do, as tired as I was come home at 7 a.m. and then go to sleep.
Oh, man. Yeah.
You know, because my body is just saying, hey, it's daytime. it's time to get up. You know, meanwhile, my brain is telling my body what it can go do with itself. You just try to, all I can say is thank God for blackout curtains, which takes me back to the dark again.
Well, maybe that one. I think I'd probably rather be in a completely dark room. Just give me an excuse to sleep all the time.
Yeah, that works.
This is the vanity one. Would you rather be the first person to explore a planet or be the inventor of a drug that cures a deadly disease?
Oh, man.
It's got to be.
Yep. See, because my Apollo space geek, which you have not met yet, Tom, is all over that planetary exploration, but I do have a humanity side too, so wow. I guess I'm going to have to take one for the team and invent that that cure-all.
There you go.
I'm going to do the same in the hopes that a child that is cured by my wonder drug will grow up to invent even better ways to explore even more planets.
And will invite us to go with it. Yes, I like
exactly.
That.
That's correct.
Yeah.
No, you'll give him the vaccine, and then you'll grab him by the collar and be like, look, little puke, if you don't invent a spaceship that can take me to another planet, I'm going to be so mad at you.
Exactly. Get on that. Your disease
this
is gone.
This is the payment.
Or get me into Disneyland for free. One of those two.
Get me into Disneyland. Invent me a spaceship, or this thing is off.
Yeah.
And if I must stick with, right, and if I must stick with my universal theme, if the kid can give me Salma Hayek's phone number, I do good.
Somebody likes Salma Hayek. She is a beautiful woman.
That she is. I'm just saying. If you're out there, Salma, call me. I'm listening.
There. It turns out Salma Hayek is way into concept albums, so today's your lucky day. That's just what I hear through the grapevine.
Nice.
I can hear her now sitting at home going, what about pros and cons of hitchhiking, guys?
Actually, she's meant to be on this call, but you know, she realized she didn't give a crap, so all right.
I really want to have that conversation.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on the show, guys. This is the first of many.
Hey, thanks for having
Prague
me.
Talks.
This was great.
So we'll do this again, hopefully with some frequency. And listeners out there, if you want to think of anything that you'd like us to talk about, or themes you'd like us to cover, there's so much to talk about in the world of Prague. So send us a comment, send us an email, send us a private message through our Facebook page. So have a good night, everyone, and Prague on.